Well, thanks very much, Mr. Bloom, for joining us. CBS has reported that barely 5 hours after the attacks on Washington and New York, Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld is quoted in intelligence notes asking whether the information was good enough to hit Saddam at that time. And he's quoted as saying, "Go massive, sweep it all up, things related and not." If it weren't for September 11th, would we be marching to war in Iraq today?
Well, they may have found some other excuse. They have wanted to do this for some time. 9/11 gave them the excuse to do many things. Afghanistan, Iraq, the crackdown on civil liberties at home, and crackdown on the Freedom of Information Act here, all kinds of things at home and abroad. So they would have found some other pretext if it wasn't for 9/11. I mean, that isn't even a pretext. I mean, at least with Afghanistan on the surface, at least, it could be used as a pretext because there was some connection there, supposedly. With Iraq, there's no connection whatsoever to 9/11, so it's a stretch even for that.
So would you suggest then the war in Afghanistan would have happened at some time or another, regardless of 9/11 then?
It might have, because the U.S. government had been negotiating with the Taliban not up until 6 months or so before 9/11 to arrange for the safeguarding oil and gas pipelines from the Caspian Sea through Afghanistan and Pakistan into the Indian Ocean. U.S. oil companies were involved in that. And that was not getting as far as the U.S. side wanted it to. And so they were looking for some other way to alter the government's position in Afghanistan. So the motive was always there. Again, they needed the pretext, and this pretext has served many, many functions.
Now, you mentioned that there's no connection whatsoever between Saddam or Iraq and 9/11. Canadian speechwriter for George Bush, David Frum, who's self-proclaimed author of the Axis of Evil concept, says that he came across the idea while reading FDR's reaction to Japan's attack at Pearl Harbor and saying that the larger threat was Nazi Germany, which he then likens Al-Qaeda and 9/11 to the greater threat, which is Iraq. Is there any possible way that this link between Pearl Harbor and the Nazis, Al-Qaeda, and Iraq can be taken seriously?
If you're a speechwriter for George Bush, it can be taken very seriously, yes. I can see from his point of view, it fits in nicely to what he wants to find. I mean, a rational human being would have a hard time finding any credence in all that. A rational human being would ask for some evidence, as the world has been asking for a full year now. We've been asking for evidence of that, and there has not been anything forthcoming. So I don't think by now anybody believes that at all.
Now, Vice President Dick Cheney's energy policy cast it as inevitable that two-thirds of the U.S. oil supply will be imported by 2020. Iraq has the world's second-largest oil reserves. How significant is oil in the conflict in Iraq?
Oh, it's a sine qua non. It's not the only reason, but it's certainly one which has to be there. Without that, the other reasons might not be important enough. The oil has other aspects to it also. I mean, there's the question of the official currency for OPEC, or for oil transactions, has been the dollar. But a year and a half ago or so, Iraq switched to the euro, which apparently upsets the U.S. powers that be greatly, and they're afraid that OPEC may change to the euro officially for the OPEC transactions, and that would be a, from what I've read from in economists' theories, that would be a great blow to the U.S. financially, and it would have to be stopped by the U.S. That's very important for them. And if they were in charge of Iraq, as they have openly admitted is their plan, they could easily switch Iraq's decision, and I think Saudi Arabia and the others would be in a very tenuous position if they wanted to buck the United States on this issue. They would have to go along with keeping the dollar as the official currency.
Now, the Pentagon has recently confirmed that the war plan is entitled Shock and Awe. It involves 3,000 missiles in 48 hours, 800 of them cruise missiles, in order to provide the Hiroshima effect, destroying the enemy's will to fight. One Pentagon official called the assault plan unprecedented, but by searching through your table of contents and killing hope, do you feel that it's possible that this assessment is in fact true, that this would be an unprecedented attack?
Well, in terms of firepower, I guess it could be. I mean, I don't know exactly how much they're going to use, but they certainly have the means to top what they did in Afghanistan or Iraq earlier, or in Serbia or Hiroshima. I mean, they have the means to double Hiroshima or do 10 times that, I'm sure. So it's up to them. I can't predict how much they're going to use.
I just mean, I guess, in lieu of the fact of the saturation bombings of Southeast Asia, the fire bombings of Dresden and Tokyo, it seems to be a bit of a stretch to say that any attack of that magnitude would be unprecedented, considering the docket of American atrocities and bombing raids.
Well, I was being technical. I mean, simply in terms of tonnage of bombs or explosive power, however that's measured, you know, it could be unprecedented. But I mean, this is not really an important issue. It's whether it's equal to Hiroshima or twice Hiroshima, it's still going to be total devastation for the people of Iraq. And I think this report was issued as one more way of frightening the people there and frightening the government. It's psychological warfare, and that's probably, at the moment, that's all I can say about it.
And now, on that note, I guess, after the first Gulf War, which you've said was the greatest aerial assault in history.
Up
until that time.
Right? Yeah.
George Herbert Walker Bush said that the specter of Vietnam had been forever buried in the sands of the Arabian Peninsula. What effect has this Vietnam syndrome, the idea of a war carrying on too long in the face of popular opposition, what role has this played in the expansion of the empire and the altering of its tactics?
Well, one of the main effects of that is in the media. The Pentagon has learned that if you show the American public too many pictures of dead peasants and children, if the pictures are too bloody and too gruesome day after day, you will certainly help to build up antagonism to the war. And so ever since Vietnam, they have slowly but surely limited the media access to the battlefield. It gets less and less with each war. And now it's all staged now. I mean, they'll allow the media to see only what they want them to see. So that's one effect of Vietnam. As far as the length of the war, they bombed Serbia day and night for 78 days. That's a long time. They will bomb until they get a certain effect, either a surrender or total devastation. It can't be predicted how long that'll take. Of course, they would prefer to do it quickly, but not too quickly. They always have a number of experiments to carry out. These wars are done partly to carry out experiments with the newest weapons, and so they have to have the time for that as well. But I don't know how much time they need. They'll take as long as they want. That's the empire does what it wants. You and I can just follow behind and comment about this and that, but the empire will do what it wants.
Well, under that guideline of speed, is this war plan of fighting within the metropolis of Baghdad, which has some 5 million people, is this a potential disaster for the American propaganda effort? Because, I mean, news media would have much greater access to inner city Baghdad than they, as opposed to the highway of death or what have you in the deserts.
Normally, what they would do is just bomb the cities until all possible resistance was snuffed out, and then they would send in forces on the ground who would then meet minimal resistance. But they now want to, at the same time, avoid the torching of the oil wells and other things like maybe chemical and biological weapons, which will pollute the air and harm the American soldiers as they were last time. So I've read there's plans to do something on the ground even before the bombing has run its course. But who can say when and where that's going to take place or what's going to happen? But it won't be as simple as in the past, because they do have this side objective of wanting to thwart any pollution of the air by Iraq.
On to the United Nations. After the U.S. attacked Grenada in 83, despite overwhelming U.N. disapproval, President Reagan said, 100 nations in the U.N. have not agreed with us on just about everything that's come before them where we're involved, and it didn't upset my breakfast at all. You said that the empire does what it wants. What role does the U.N. play in that?
Well, even empires, even dictators, everybody wants to be loved. They want to appear to be legitimate. General Pinochet in Chile, he was in power for 17 years as a dictator, but he longed to be loved as well. And he held a referendum certain that he would win, and he lost. And he was forced to leave office. The U.S. empire can do what it wants from a military point of view, but it also wants to appear to be somewhat legitimate. So it uses the U.N. for that purpose, if it can. And it's done pretty well that way in the past. And it's making the attempt now. It thought that could go ahead, the empire, that is, thought it could go ahead and do what it wanted in Iraq with U.N. support and the whole world support. It was surprised by a certain outburst of opposition, so much so that it was forced to play the U.N. game. And so far it hasn't won that game. What's going to happen will be fascinating to observe, but I can't predict it.
So you feel like if the UN resolution that the U.S. is going to present to the Security Council tomorrow will play any significant role then in the conflict? If they'll just go it alone, if they don't get UN approval?
Well, they said they would. Richard Perle, I just read on the internet, he was interviewed, and speaking about France, he said even if they veto our resolution, we'll still invade Iraq. But these things, this has been going back and forth now for almost a year, and it's a lot of psychological warfare involved. They want to frighten Iraq. They want to appear tough as can be. They refuse to admit any weakening of their resolve. It's all show, and who knows? I mean, only time will tell. I can't predict it. It's gone up and down and back and forth for so long now.
Now, to the speaking to the region more in general, Israeli human rights groups like B'Tselem and many respected Middle East correspondents, Justin Hugler, Amira Haas of Haaretz, have warned that Israel is stepping up military activities in the occupied territories while the world's media focuses on Iraq. Haas went so far as to say that an Iraqi missile attack on Israel or a Palestinian support for Saddam during the war could precipitate mass expulsion of the Palestinians. What impact do you think that a war in Iraq could have on Palestinians?
Well, there is a good chance, I think, of Israel using this as a pretext for the so-called transfer, which is otherwise called ethnic cleansing, moving the Palestinians en masse to Jordan, to newly liberated Iraq, and who knows where else? That's where they certainly want that. Whether they can get away with it, only time will tell. But the war would be a good pretext, a good cover for them to do that.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question about the Star Wars missile defense shield. To what degree do you think the debate in the liberal media about the cost and effectiveness or feasibility of the missile defense shield has obscured the more fundamental questions, like the U.S.'s right to militarize space in contravention of numerous international treaties, or the fact that it would give the U.S. first strike nuclear capability, full spectrum dominance, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I personally don't care at all whether about the cost or whether it works or not. I do care about the total lack of need for it, and the effects which you mentioned. But liberal media does harp on such things because they haven't got the guts to come out and question the need for it. I mean, often so they jump on these side issues.
Well, we're calling from Halifax, military port city in Canada, and two Canadian destroyers are set to join the American carrier battle groups in the Arabian Sea. One is actually leaving tomorrow morning from Halifax. I wanted to ask you what role Canada plays in the American Empire, in the expansion of the American Empire.
It's called a fig leaf. I mean, the U.S. government obviously doesn't need anyone's help to overwhelm anyone else in the world militarily. But they do, getting back to the need to be loved and to the need to appear to be somewhat legitimate, for those purposes, they do need the support of Canada and Britain and anyone else who can offer it. It's a fig leaf. They, in some cases, these nations do offer a certain amount of military help, which makes the war a bit easier for Washington, but that's not vital. They could have taken out Iraq completely a few months ago without all this buildup.
So you mentioned again that the empire does what it wants, and on Saturday, February 15th, tens of millions of people worldwide stood up in unprecedented opposition to the war on Iraq. George Bush commented the next day that the opposition affected him none, and it would be like conducting policy based on a focus group. Do you really believe that this kind of opposition affects the empire in no discernible way?
Well, it may not stop the war, but I tell you that if the U.S. carries out the war in the face of worldwide opposition, it may very well be the beginning of the end for the empire. And I hope it is. I hope the war doesn't take place, but if it does, that could be one beneficial side effect.